Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lambert. Today is Sunday, February 16th, 2020. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like the show, please rate and review it on Apple Podcasts and or Stitcher. Give it a 5-star review. Let everyone know why you like it, because it will make me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. Let me know what's on your mind. More importantly, what's on your heart? You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival. And you can follow me, your host, the guy talking to you right now, on Twitter at Chris Lambert. This is episode 405. I have a super special return guest. You know him, you love him, the great Andy Klein from the Three Guys on Podcast. Going to share that conversation with you in a bit. Right now, I'm just going to talk to you. I'm going to talk to you for a few moments. I am on location in beautiful Manahawkin, New Jersey, which is nestled alongside Long Beach Island in South Jersey. So I just got done doing a week of shows at the Borgata. I was there from Sunday through this past Friday, and I had some fun shows. Some were better than others. I would say the Sunday, Thursday and Friday shows were awesome. Other shows were great too. Like, they were fun. It's just kind of like one of those three were just like, you get off stage and, you're like, it's not, you just like, okay, that was work. And then when you see some of the people that were at the show in the casino, they come up to you, oh my God, that was so good. I really loved you. Really liked you. You were funny and all that stuff. So it's like, oh, you guys, okay. Cause you guys didn't laugh as much as you could have. And these are grade A jokes. These are grade A fucking jokes that I'm working on. And I've been working on for a while. I don't want to get too loud cause I'm in a hotel and it's early. And I kind of want to keep this. I'm going to try to keep this intro short. I don't want to Mark Maron it. But I just, I want to get back home, get back on the road and go hit up this, breakfast buffet. Apparently I've been told that there's possibly an omelet bar, and I want to partake in that. So yeah, this week was cool. One of my big accomplishments of the week. Well, that's so bad. So I got to read. I wanted to dedicate most of my time reading the last week, and I finally got through Colson Whitehead's Underground Railroad, which is he won the Pulitzer Prize for. And it was fantastic. I kind of read his stuff out of order. Most of it. Yeah. Because I haven't read Zone One yet. And I haven't read, I think that's the only one. Well, his nonfiction books I have not read yet. But I've read all of his narratives. So I read Nickel Boys. And so I went back and read Underground Railroad. And I got to read Zone One. Anyway, you guys don't give a shit about that. So I read that, and I loved it. And one of my favorite authors of all time, favorite American author. And I read this book called The View from the Flyover Country, Dispatches from a Forgotten America by Sarah Kendzior. I've been talking about her for the past couple years, and like, just like, I gotta read her book. Been following her on Twitter. She's an anthropologist and a journalist, and just an incredible book. And actually, before I had some of the stuff low key that she talks about in this book, which is a book of essays, Andy and I were kind of touching on some of the issues that I felt like I was informed even more. Like, that it kind of changed my opinion on a lot of things. So some of the things that I might have been telling Andy in this conversation, I might have kind of changed my opinion on with in after reading this book. It's just like she, it's just kind of like a, she's so good, man. She's so fucking smart. And it, she's one of those smart people. I would say like a Bomani Jones, like a Ta-Nehisi Coates, like these really smart, cause you can be smart and not be able to relay information to the common man, to the plebeians like myself. And some people have a hard, you know, they have a hard time disseminating that knowledge to the masses. And I feel like I really appreciate the way that she broke stuff down with regards to like excelling in education, like as far as becoming a professor and or what it takes to really try to achieve the American dream. And it's almost like it, in a lot of ways, it seems depressing, and it's almost like a fallacy, like the American dream. But it's a really fucking good book, and I just saw where she announced that she's got a new book coming out called Hiding in Plain Sight: The Invention of Donald Trump and the Erosion of America. And that's her new book that's coming out in April. So as soon as I found that out, I pre-ordered the book, and I tweeted at her that I finished the book, and I finally got around to getting, you know, finishing the book. And she said, "Oh, thanks." And I was like, "No, thank you." You know, it's fucking, she's great. And so I got to get into more of her stuff. I've been watched a couple of interviews that she did on YouTube and stuff. And that's a good rabbit hole to go for me to go down to anyway. So I recommend, obviously Colson Whitehead won the fucking Pulitzer Prize, and he's one of my favorites. So I'm biased on his shit already, but Sarah Kendzior, man, she lives up to all the hype. So I got to get into Full Dissidence from Howard Bryant, and then get through We Were 8 Years in Power from the God Coates, you know what I'm saying? Ta-Nehisi Coates, Randolph's good friend Ta. But I think what I want to do is maybe get through Full Dissidence and then have Randolph back on and just kind of shoot the shit about that, and so on and so forth. I want to give you a movie review. I talked about it extensively on Patreon. Oh, so before I get to that, I pre-ordered my, this is the thing that I wanted to lead with, but I was like, that's too juvenile. But I got my pre-order of the Ellie edition for The Last of Us Part 2. And so most of you, the four or five nerds that play video games that listen to this show, I think there's more of you that play video games that play The Last of Us. I think there's a few of you that listen, that have played that game. And I don't know if you're as excited as I am about it, but so there's several editions of this game. And it's a couple $100 if you really want to get hardcore into the Ellie edition. And it comes with, like, when you buy this stuff, it comes with all these trinkets and stuff like that. But the big draw was that it came with a statue of Ellie, like, playing the guitar. And then you get her backpack, a replica of her backpack. That's like, I was like, oh shit, this is what I want to go all out. And I've never gone all out for a video game like this. And so I'm super excited. So Sony actually made an announcement that they were doing another release at like 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. So thank God I was on vacation. I was locked and loaded. I was trying to get it through Amazon because Amazon, I thought, would be the most efficient. And I had those windows open. At the time, at 9 o'clock, Amazon was not running. Best Buy was acting kind of funky. So I ended up getting it actually on GameStop, which I thought was going to be a hard thing to do. But I got it off of GameStop because I was almost at the finish line with Best Buy, and they were like, "Oh, this item is sold out now." I was like, "What the fuck?" And then I just went on GameStop and handled it, and so I'm good. So release day, I'm going to get the Ellie edition. I already pre-ordered the collector's edition, which basically doesn't come with the backpack, and it's and I think that's it. It comes with like some other bullshit that, you know, but I wanted to go all out, and I went kind of crazy. I ordered this, I think it's like an 8-inch statue of Ellie with a machete. So that's going to go up somewhere in my apartment. So I'm you know, I'm all in with this. And let me have this, okay? You might judge me and say, Chris, you're going to turn 40 on Friday. Why are you so obsessed with this video game? Well, because I don't have a family. I mean, I have my mom and dad, and I don't have a girlfriend. So I'm excited about this. Just let me have this. Let me have this. Let me enjoy this. You know, let me just, okay, fuck. So I'm happy about that. I can't wait, man. That, like, I just, oh my God. I just hope I can get through the whole thing over that weekend. I may have to take, like, because I'm going to be doing this play. And so now that I've announced that I'm on this show, I guess I'll do the formal thing. Because not that some people know that I'm in this play on Broadway and stuff. And I'm not trying to, like, it's like, it's a big deal for me, but I'm not trying to blow it up like I'm the star of the fucking show, but I'm excited about it. But what would have been dope, and I keep going back to this, and I know I'm not the only one out there, because I keep seeing it on Twitter, and people keep, because it was supposed to come out this Friday on February 21st, and people were just like, oh my God, like, yeah, I'm excited about this game, but we were going to have it on February 21st. Just think about that. We were going to have it, but the developers are trying to make the best game that they can, and so be it. You know, and all that good stuff. So May 29th. So that's Memorial Day week. So we're off. Everybody's off on Monday. And I'm going to have to take that Friday off. I might take that Monday off. I don't know. I might have to take that Monday off, because I'm going to like go dark. I might have to mute The Last of Us 2 or any. I might have to mute that shit on my Twitter. I can't, like, yo. I don't know. And then try to grab Tajay and do like a postmortem on it just to get through the game the first time. But I'm so excited about that. And I think even though I'm getting these special editions and all that stuff, I'm probably still gonna, because all the video game stores are gonna be closed by the time the play's over, you know, that night. So because it's gonna be Thursday, really the 28th, people are gonna be getting this game, and I don't know if I can get some connect. There's a video game store. I know GameStop's not gonna do anything, but I might try to be friends with. I don't know. I might try to do something. But there's another place that I might have a connect with. So I might have to try to build a relationship with that store and try to get something going. So we'll see. So I can just, I don't know, young. I don't know. I'm excited. So, all right. So I want to talk about the photograph briefly. I kind of did this on the Patreon joint, but what I wanted to say this on the main feed, the photograph is fucking terrific. And I found out that the writer-director, Stella McGee, another film that I really loved last year called The Weeknd, she wrote and directed that also. And that movie was terrific. It was very pleasant. And it's with Sasheer Zamata, Tone Bell, Yolande Noel, and DeWanda Wise. And it was just like, it was black. It was just, they was chilling. There was some like conflict and internal stuff going on, but overall it was a pleasant rom-com. It wasn't traumatic like all the people are saying on, you know, The Photograph is a non-black trauma movie and blah, 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 and all that shit. But she wrote, so her resume is really impressive. Gene of the Joneses, I have not seen. And she did a short film called Recovering Undercover Over Lover, which was a short. She did this movie, Everything, Everything, which was based on a novel with Amanda Stenberg. And off the rip, like, when they were, you know, showing the previews of this movie, I was like, man, everything. Why does Amanda Stenberg always be doing these movies? Why is she always doing these movies with these white boys? But then I saw the movie and I was like, yo, it's actually good. The soundtrack's good. All that, you know, it's a solid movie. She directed a couple episodes of Grown-ish, First Wives Club on BET. She directed an episode of Insecure. And so she's really good. And this movie, the reason I think it's a really important film, because I'm going to read you the blurb. I don't want to spend too much time on it because I talked about it on the Patreon, but I feel like I should say something. I had it queued up. Okay, here we go. The photograph. When famed photographer Christina Ames dies unexpectedly, she leaves her estranged daughter, May, hurt, angry, and full of questions. When May finds a photograph tucked away in a safe deposit box, she soon finds herself delving into her mother's early life, an investigation that leads to an unexpected romance with a rising journalist. So this stars Issa Rae and Lakeith Stanfield. And reason I think this movie is really important because it shows nuanced and interesting and complicated black female characters. So it's not just like, oh, she's the girl and blah, blah, blah. It's like, one, the mother that's that plays Christina. Let me get her name. Oh, you'd think that I would have all this open because I was going to talk about it. But I think it's just leftover stuff where I clicked on the Patreon looking at this stuff. Shante Adams. So this movie kind of reminded me of Whiplash because it was like this character was driven by her passion of photography. And she kind of didn't let anything affect that. She was like OCD about her craft. And like, you know, now it gets kind of thrown around because he's dead. But that Mamba mentality, it kind of reminded me of Whiplash because that Miles Teller character was obsessed with drumming and all this stuff. And you don't really see that much. You always see a dude. You always see a dude be my craft, you know, like Mo Better Blues, like Denzel and Mo Better Blues, and just obsessed with, you know, being a musician and what that does to his relationships. And it's kind of like that. That's kind of what the Christina character was like. And I thought it was interesting because you don't really see that much. And then, you know, it lessened her capacity to love and to really connect with like somebody that was her true love. And really, like, you know, it was very interesting. And I like the fact that, you know, it showed the effect that it had on her daughter. And then what the daughter and the Issa Rae's character was like, yo, I don't know if I'm going to be able to love and open myself up because of the way my mother was. Is there something wrong with me? And she's trying to figure stuff out. And Lakeith Stanfield's character was obviously interested in going through his things. But I really not trying to like blow smoke or trying to size it because it's like, you know, I'm not trying to size it like I'm being an ally of black women. It's just a good ass movie. This black woman made a good ass movie, and it's about these nuanced black characters, and it's just really fucking interesting. I'm not trying to, you know what I'm saying? I'm not trying to be performative about this shit. It's just fucking good. And then looking her up on IMDb, I was like, oh, she made another movie that I like. She made two films that I liked, and she's directed TV shows that I like. So it's not a fucking mistake. It's not a mistake. This woman is Stella McGee is 3 for 3. You know, she hasn't missed. So I highly recommend this. And let's get to Andy. So some of the stuff we were talking about, we talked about a lot of stuff, and we were talking about like healthcare, talking about politics and stuff like that. And it's just like part of me was like, yo, can some of these people just get a fucking job that gets them insurance? Or if their spouse does not have if they're not on their spouse's insurance or they're not married or something, get a job. A lot of these people that are pursuing these artistic pursuits or any of these types of pursuits, like, are you, you know, you can do something to supplement your income. And it's kind of like what I was thinking about with the Sarah Kendzior thing, where she's talking about pursuing a life in academia and how hard it is if you don't have money. Like, they basically want you to intern for a lot of positions in a lot of different fields. And it just kind of opened me up a little bit. So I kind of want to walk back some of the stuff I said, but I don't think all of it, but just it just made me more, her book made me more mindful about that stuff. But there are success stories. There are people that I mentioned, and I kind of dug myself into a bit of a hole, but I was thinking about some of the comics that I've talked to, female comics at that, that I've known that have been on the show. I mentioned a few, and I forgot to mention the great Shalewa Sharp, who is a very talented comedian and writer, and who is somebody that doesn't hide the fact that she has a day job. She talks about it in her act. You know, her album, So You Just Out Here is her latest joint. She's got an album, Stay Eating Cookies. Really fucking funny. Actually, early this morning, she did this really funny Instagram live where she was tasting the different Sprites, because they came out with like three or four new Sprites that I didn't really know about. They got like a Sprite ginger ale and a limeade thing. So just really talented people that have day jobs and they pursue their craft and all that stuff. So I wanted to mention that. Also, Ray Sani's mentioned on the show before she got, you know, all the cool writing jobs. She had a day job. She and I were talking about that. Like, you know, when we did gigs together and stuff, we was like, yeah, day job, working here, doing this. So that's also a part of the grind. But I just wanted to make sure that I mentioned some black women that did cool shit, too, that worked hard and that should be noted, you know. But at the same, I want to be sincere about it. I don't want you guys to think like, oh, God, you know, I'm not trying to be on that bullshit I'm just not trying to be performative about that shit. It's just real shit. People that I know. I mentioned some white ladies that are also talented and do their thing and have good jobs and pursue their craft and everything like that. So I just want to make that clear before we get into my conversation with Andy. And I was super excited to have him on. Like, I unofficially call these conversations this intro is long as fuck. Sorry. The Borgata sessions, when I get to talk to some of my friends while I'm at the Borgata. So this is part of it. So Andy, I reached out to some other people and they did not get back to me. So you get the great Andy Klein. Andy reached out and he's like, I can do it at 6:30. Like, it was like on, I think, Tuesday night. And he's like, I can do 6:30. I was like, yeah, let's do it. Let's go. Let's rock out, you know? And so this is a conversation that we were going to have. We'd have if we were just talking on the phone and it wasn't being recorded. Please excuse the sound. There's like some issues with the phone and stuff. But I think overall it sounds great. And Andy is going to be at Magoobie's Joke House on February 27th through the 29th, opening for Robert Kelly. That's going to be a really good show, some really good shows. So if you're in the Baltimore, Maryland area, go see Andy and Robert Kelly. It's going to be a good time. Without further ado, here's my conversation with the great Andy Klein. Start now. Okay, for me, it's just like being away from the TPS reports for a week. It's been kind of good for me. I haven't been able to, I haven't listened to many podcasts, so I kind of don't know what's going on. I do and I don't.
Did you just take the week off from work?
Yeah, I took the week off. This is technically my vacation. I'm at the Borgata doing shows, and all the shows are at 9 o'clock. So I have the day to myself and to actually just kind of relax. I read a book, which I don't really do that as much as I'd like to. So I felt good about that. I just went downstairs to the cafeteria, employee cafeteria, ate a little something, came back and just read the whole day. So I feel good about that. And I'll read some more.
So are you gambling too? Are you doing any of that?
No, I'm pretty lame, man. I don't gamble. I'm going to probably gamble with my health by going to have this big ass burger. One of these days. It's like one of the top five burgers at the resort. So it's like at this steakhouse, okay. And I think it's supposed to be really good. So I'm going to try that. But other than that, nothing.
You get a discount for that?
They might. I mean, I think in one of the stores, like they have like the convenience store that's open all day.
Yeah.
I got some candy that was 10% off, 10 or 20% off. But the fucking thing was still $7.
Of course, yeah, it's resort prices.
Yeah, so
it's still more, even with the discount, it's more than what you should be paying.
Right, right. And I haven't been anywhere, which is good. I'm not spending money, so I'm just kind of chilling. And I think maybe I'll go to the grocery store and get some fruit tomorrow.
Yeah.
But I told myself that I'm not gonna just go to the movies every day. I'm just gonna chill. I'm gonna read. I just finished the Colson Whitehead book that he won the Pulitzer for, The Underground Railroad.
Okay.
So Randolph and I did the Nickel Boys. We read that was his latest, and we read that, and we did like a little review last fall. So I just went back and picked up this one. Then I'm gonna read some Sarah Kendzior, The View from the Flyover Country, Dispatches from the Forgotten America.
And this is actual reading. You're not doing like book on tape?
No, actual reading. Hard. What do you call it now? Just a book?
A physical. You're holding a physical book.
The physical copy. Yeah.
Right.
It's something about that, man. I don't know how you are, but I like the books. I like the tactile thing. What about you?
I'm not a reader, so I mean, for me, like I like not having anything in my hand. But at this point, I feel like because you know there was that sort of era like a while back when it became like Kindle and e-readers and all that shit.
Right.
And at this point, I don't think like if I wanted to read it, like every now and then, I guess I'll read something. But if I wanted to read a book, I don't think I could read it on my phone because there's too many other apps on the phone. I'm not used to just holding the phone and reading, or a tablet for that matter.
I'm the same way. Yeah.
And I would probably just go like audio because those are, you know, they're like 10 hours long and you can just space it out during your drive or whatever. I'd probably do that. But yeah, holding a physical book, I never, people romanticize that. People who read romanticize that. And yeah. I don't know, that didn't seem like necessarily a better alternative, but I think at this point it probably would be just because I wouldn't have the urge to go check like Twitter or something in the middle of it.
Yeah. I kind of feel that way too if I'm doing something on my phone, like watching when you're not around your TV, watching like if I'm doing laundry and I'm watching like something on Netflix on my phone, it's kind of hard to not look on Twitter or Instagram. I feel the same way. Let's look at other apps, you know.
Yeah. And like when I used to watch football, like when I used to play fantasy football, I would have, you know, the TV on, then I would have a tablet, then I would have my phone because I would be checking this fantasy league and that fantasy league and stats from other games. It was like a whole apparatus.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, that's just intense.
Yeah, it's too much. Like, you know, it's just I can't imagine doing productive things with my phone now. You know, I don't associate it with being productive. I associate it with distracting myself from productivity, you know?
Do you write jokes on your phone, or do you just write in a notebook, or what do you do?
I write in my head and I'll jot down maybe like premise ideas, little, you know, 2-3 words, couple sentences, maybe a paragraph.
Yeah.
I think at most I'll sort of spit out two paragraphs into my phone. But I just stay in my head with it. Like I just obsess over things. I'll just think about it over and over again. And then kind of when I get close to finished product, I'll maybe jot down a couple things, but I just remember it, you know. That's kind of what it comes down to. If I sat and wrote on a notepad or on my phone, I don't think it would be that good. I have sat and written at my computer before, and that works. I'll write like an essay. I'll write like, you know, it will be like free writing, basically.
Sure.
Just writing. And then maybe I'll go back later and like, you know, you read it like a week later and suddenly you see where all the punchlines can go and where all the tangents can go. Stuff like that. But that's not my normal process, is just to just obsess in my head, you know.
That's
days.
I agree with you. I'm the same way. Like, I just think about it all the time. And then I'm the same way. I use the Evernote app on my phone and just like do like a set list, like for general stuff. And then if I have an idea, I'll just kind of put that like a bullet point. And then I let the audience tell me what's funny.
it's a dialogue, really.
I
used to do Evernote, and then I just kind of went to whatever the Samsung Notes app is.
I use that too.
I just do Gmail drafts too, because that's basically, you know, poor man's Evernote, because you can just take it anywhere. It's on all your devices. Just open up your Gmail draft, and I don't need, like, and Evernote has all this other shit where you can do bullet points and you can do different formatting. I just need the words written down,
right?
You know, more than anything else. If I'm about to fall asleep and I think of something, and I know I'm not going to be able to just obsess about it for the next few hours, then I'll write. I'll, like, right before I fall asleep or something, I'll grab my phone and put it in the notes app, you know, just to make sure I don't forget it. Because I have done that. Where I've thought of something and I thought, oh, tomorrow I'm going to really think about this bit, and I wake up the next day and I can't remember what it was.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I feel like it sometimes it takes like just doing, like, I don't know, man. It's so, like, for me, where I'm at in my career as a fledgling comic, I had like a career milestone late last month. I headlined an A room because somebody dropped out, and it was up in Poughkeepsie, and I did 48 minutes. I could have went longer, but I didn't want to go over time. I didn't want to be that black comic to go run over time. And after I got off stage, the booker was like, oh, you could have went. Oh, man. He's like, you know, Rich Voss does it all the time. I was like, well, I'm not Rich Voss.
Voss is white.
No, it's not even. I wasn't even thinking about that. But even like Rich Voss, like, he's a veteran comic, you know.
Yeah, he's Rich Voss. Yeah.
So it's sort of like, I found, like, I was trying to do this R. Kelly joke that I'd been working on for like a few months, actually. And it kind of came together, but it came together in a way that, like, the audience kind of, one guy said, what? And I said, yeah, he's a bad guy. He's a bad person.
Yeah.
And then I kind of riffed on that. It's like, and it got somewhere, but at the same time, I don't know if you could really recreate some of those moments anyway.
Are you doing the tape every set and closed caption it?
No.
Thing?
No, I just.
I'm going to start, I think. I don't know.
Maybe if I do the, like, because I still want to do an album, and I hate fucking talking about it on the show, but it's just like with getting into this this play that starts in a couple weeks, I wanted to do it in February, but it just didn't work out logistically, because this would have been the perfect time, me being away, doing all these sets, and I did do a lot of different shows in different venues already this year, and I've been feeling pretty good about the act, but it's at the same time, it's just like, well, I got to do it when it's right. If the showbiz god says you're gonna act for a few months, then I have to do that.
Yeah,
but at the same time, I want to try to get more spots in the city now that I'll be, you know, in the city a lot more. I got to take advantage of it.
Yeah, it could be your intro. Like, oh, he just got done with his Broadway play. Give it up for your next comic.
Yeah, like, what?
yeah. show up like, oh, I still got my makeup on. My bad. Like,
oh, you know. Oh my God, you guys. Oh my God.
How you guys been?
Drop
what are you guys up to?
Drop a playbill out of my pocket or some shit.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, but it's like you ever feel that way where it's just like you, I just feel like, how is it in D.C.? Do you close out a lot of shows and do you get to work your stuff, you know? Or do you just...
Yeah, I mean, if that's what I'm looking for, I can get it, mm-hmm. basically. So yeah. I don't necessarily try to do that all the time.
Right.
I'll just wait my turn at the open mics like everyone else and this and that. But if I'm like, if I'm getting ready to record an album or something, I'll call in all the favors.
Yeah.
You know, I'll say, hey, man, let me headline your show. I haven't done your show in a while. Let me, you know, I need stage time and all that stuff. But mm-hmm. I generally don't like to just kind of show up and go long, you know, do the sort of the veteran comedian trappings.
Yeah.
Of like, yeah, yeah. Let me just, if I walk in and they put me right up, that's great. I'm not going to go long, but you know, I've seen that guy before who shows up and throws his weight around and does 15 when he's supposed to do 6 and you know, this and that. And I try to avoid like being that guy. So
yeah,
I'm strategic about it, but yeah, I mean, if I want to do a longer set, I can probably make a couple, you know, send a couple texts, make a couple calls and line one up.
Yeah.
Anytime I want. But I generally like just do what everyone else is doing, you know,
yeah.
pop in, do a mic, run to the next mic, you know, see if I can get a couple in a night and then go home.
So right. Yeah.
That's the way it is. But the next time I record, which I don't know when that's going to be. Yeah. I'll be like, just like last time, I'll be like, any stage time you have, you know, book
yeah.
me, please. Mm-hmm. You know, I gotta get this album ready. There's this kind of thing where I think a lot of comics have been doing it lately where they're just kind of, they're casual about their album recordings and they're just kind of like, I'm just gonna capture a night.
Fuck that, dude. Like I wanna capture a night at the club, but capture a night of me doing well at a club, not
yeah,
fucking around.
That's the, you know, like you want the crowd, you want the listening audience to have an experience.
Yeah.
And, you know, not just to respect the honesty of the moment, but to have an experience. Sometimes the experience is you killing. It's not just you showing up.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's still like a special thing for me, but I've even seen people, cause you know, now the trend is don't bother with waiting to record and put something out. Just put out like a minute clip here, a minute clip there. And maybe you can record all of it later and put it out. But even that now, I'm seeing a lot of people throw out that little minute closed caption thing, and it's like they're not even really doing that well. It's like, why'd you put that up? So
yeah,
but
yeah,
they're just like, well, this was just me capturing me in a casual moment on stage. Like, okay, and then it's like, okay, my thinking has to shift, not theirs. Mm-hmm. My thinking has shifted. Okay, this 1 minute clip thing is more just like, oh, look, here's a little thing I threw together, here's a little moment I riffed out, here's a little topical thing that's just in the news for a week. And you know, it doesn't have to be me killing, just be a, it's content, hashtag content.
That's
you know?
What everybody, like I listened to Eric Griffin's podcast a lot, and he was just saying, yeah, well, now it's just content now anyway. And obviously people say specials aren't specials anymore. But to me, like it's still the way that I grew up, like it was a big deal. And even yeah. though I'm not famous, I still want a good quality product out there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there's a balance too, but if you're, because people commit themselves, like I'm going to put out one clip a week or one clip every 2 weeks. So, you know, they sort of set that, put themselves on a clock. So let's say that week comes up and you really didn't capture any good sets. Your camera didn't capture them, and, you know, the battery died or whatever shows that you recorded, you didn't do that well. It's like, what do you do this week? Do you put out an old clip again, recycle it, or do you just pull out a clip from what happened this week, which is maybe you just doing okay, you know?
Yeah.
So...
Yeah.
I don't know that that loses you followers if you put out a clip of you just doing okay. I think the fact that you put out yet another clip on your weekly schedule
yeah.
is ultimately what's most important, you know?
Yeah, it's true. I don't know. I see people do it all the time, but
yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I'll do something once it's actually in the can. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Know. Yeah.
How are you feeling about like comedians endorsing presidential candidates?
You mean like famous comedians?
Famous or just... comedians, like, and even the ones that aren't. But we can start with the famous people.
Yeah, well, who are the famous ones? I know there's people who, just because I follow them on Twitter, I know who they're into, but...
Like Chappelle.
Chappelle with the Yang thing. I mean...
Donald Glover's just a famous person. He's not a comic anymore. Well, he was
who
a
did
guy,
he,
I don't know.
Who did he endorse?
Yang.
Bernie?
Yang.
Yang? Really? Mm-hmm. Okay. I got to check out this Yang guy.
Yeah.
So, I don't really know much about Yang.
I don't either. And I don't think we're going to have to.
Yeah. Probably not. Yeah, I mean, I'm fine with it. I think it's not like I've never been against comedians saying anything, mm-hmm. you know, publicly. And sometimes it's like, because then there's this weird thing about like, well, they're not trying to be funny. They're just talking. I'm like, well, yeah, that's, have you ever heard a podcast? But
like, yeah, right.
Like, I'm fine with it because they're just people like everybody else. I mean, it's I don't know how many people are going to vote for Yang because Chappelle likes him, but, you mm-hmm. know, some people are going to probably check out who Andrew Yang is. And there's nothing wrong with him getting a little more exposure. He has to still, it's just like in comedy, like you get an opportunity, you still have to be funny. If someone brings you on the road with them, you still have to make the crowd laugh. So if Chappelle says, hey, I like Andrew Yang, Yang's still going to have to capture those potential voters, you know?
Did he endorse like Ben Jealous? Who did he endorse in Maryland?
Yeah, it was Ben Jealous.
Ben Jealous, yeah.
Yeah, I think he's known him since he was
a kid
in high school or something.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so, yeah, I got no problem with that. I mean, you know, comedians are only just now getting famous enough to like, for that to be called an endorsement.
Right, for people
as opposed to just like who you're into.
Yeah.
There are more famous comedians now than probably since I've ever done comedy. So the rules shouldn't be different, though. You should just be able to say who you're into. You're going to go on stage and say it.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I kind of feel like I want, maybe you speak on this. It just seems like since 2016, since things didn't go right for some people this time, now everybody's in a fervor about everything where, I always looked at voting as my civic duty. And I think when I kind of established myself in New Jersey, I voted more. I voted in the local. I voted in the primaries and the generals and all that. But I think now in my older age, I pay more attention to it. And I've been doing it for a while. But I just looked at it as a civic duty. And I feel like as a person that doesn't want Trump in office, I feel like the best way to do it is to vote for whoever the Democratic candidate is. But it seems like some people, if their guy or gal doesn't win, like they're just going to tap out.
Yeah. And I wonder how much, because, you know, the world is in a fervor over anything now.
That's true.
If it was a non-election year, the fervor would be over something else. It would be over just whatever news story is out there.
Mm-hmm.
And typically primaries get a little bit nasty and, you know, people talk a lot of shit that then they have to walk back because they now have to endorse a different candidate.
Yeah.
And so ideally, hopefully that's just all that's going on, but there's so much petulance about it.
Yeah.
On the internet. Like, I don't know if that's really translating to real life, but the internet is still a sizable number of people. You know, there are still,
yeah,
people, the guy from, I don't know, it was a Chapo Trap House. So one of those guys tweeted, like, if Bernie doesn't get the nomination, he's staying home. You know, like he tweeted that like last week. And these people have a lot of followers. I don't know if that's going to actually influence anybody. But even that, I just feel like above anything else, it is the emotion of it, the petulance, whatever. It's just dumb. You know, like, why are you going to intentionally do something stupid?
Right.
You know, it's like, I'm going to cross my arms and stay home and pout. Like, well, you know, I mean, you know, that's dumb. You know, that's objectively not the smart move.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the practical move.
Yeah.
It's the move of like a petulant child. And so what's the benefit of that? Who benefits from staying home? You know, if you don't find a candidate that you're into, which a lot of people would be in that boat, like, I only want Bernie.
Yeah.
And I don't like anybody else and this and that. If you don't find a candidate you're into, well, think about who among your friends your vote would benefit. If you don't find any benefit for yourself,
right?
Clearly, you have some friends whose lives will be affected by who's president.
Yeah,
and not even necessarily the policies. So maybe your friends won't be affected by tax policies or whatever based on where they are economically, but they'll be affected by who's on the Supreme Court or who gets a federal judge appointment, or you know, insert any number of things the president does.
Right.
So if you can't find it within yourself to vote for your interests, vote for the interests of your friends, you know, of the people that you care about. And yeah. I was a non-voter for a lot of years. I didn't stay home. I didn't like do the old, you know, whatever, so-and-so or bust. I just thought, it doesn't affect me, blah, blah, blah. I was that dude, you know, in my 20s.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've had all the justifications. Did you see the Carlin bit? He said, you know, like right. I did all that.
Yeah.
And eventually it was like, well, why don't you get my head on my own ass? It's not about me. You know, it's about the greater good. And even if it doesn't affect me, then it's going to affect somebody. And yeah, maybe there's no ideal because the system hasn't changed the way I want it to, but things are less than ideal in life. You know, if I can get used to it. Mm-hmm. So that's just the way I see it. It's a no brainer to at least vote in somebody's best interest that you care about.
Right.
If your interests aren't being represented. And so all these people who are saying, I'm not going to vote for anybody, or who demonstrated that in 2016,
mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of Bernie fans, and this is their way of punishing, I guess, the DNC, because the DNC rigged it against Bernie and all these other things. And maybe they have legitimate anger. I don't know, but you know, you got to look at the big picture here.
Yeah.
You know, so just fucking, it's such an obvious thing to just vote for whoever is going to beat Trump.
Yeah.
Granted, if Tulsi Gabbard got the nomination, I wouldn't be happy about voting for her. I don't know, Bloomberg or somebody, but hopefully it wouldn't come to that. But I would still pick the best choice out of those two. I wouldn't just go right in, you know, Harambe or some shit.
Yeah. It worries me because it just seems like there's this fever pitch on social media, and then because it's just like, you guys aren't voting for Bernie and da, 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 and people are talking about healthcare and stuff like this. These are artists, these are comedians. And I know quite a few of my friends like you and Randolph and quite a few other people, they have day jobs. And I think maybe, I'm assuming maybe your day job, you can correct me if I'm wrong, helps you get insurance, or you get insurance with your day job, or no?
Well, I could. I also get it through my wife's day job.
Well, see, that's
point.
Okay. Yeah. See, that's to my point where it's I almost just feel like, and I sound like a dick maybe, but it's almost like get a job. I don't know, man. I don't know. I feel like an asshole saying that, or maybe I feel like a boomer. I'm not, but it's like you have to do something to survive. It's people that have specials, been on TV for a lot, and they don't have anything to show for it. Like, you don't have any type of like insurance. You're not trying to do anything, or you're always broke. I mean, I'm broke and stuff, but I can go to the doctor if I need to.
Yeah.
I don't know what is that, Andy? And am I an asshole?
You shouldn't look. This is the idealism versus reality, right? Mm-hmm. So you shouldn't have to get a job for health insurance.
And I agree about that. Let the record show that I agree.
Rest of the world figured that out a long time ago,
right?
The rest of the developed world, mm-hmm. and we're still dragging our feet. And it's not just a question of convenience. It's literally, it puts people into bankruptcy.
Mm-hmm.
People die. I mean, there are enough stories about it. And also, people can't follow their dreams.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are people who probably couldn't be a comedian or a musician or an actor because they need their health insurance, and they're tied to a job. They're tied to the city that job is in. And they literally can't just go temp for 5 or 10 years while they're getting their, you know, act together, so to speak. So,
mm-hmm.
but people try it. They're like, I need all of my day to think of jokes, because if I work, then I don't write enough, and if I don't write enough, then I don't impress the industry or whatever. I'm not churning out new material, and I got to do this. And you know, there's nobility in, I guess, making that sacrifice for your art.
Yeah.
And ideally, you wouldn't have to do it, but you know, this is kind of the world we're in. It's fucked, but that's just the way it is.
Right.
You
know?
So I don't mind people complaining about that. Like, that's a legitimate complaint to say, why is it like this? Why do I have to suffer? Why mm-hmm. does everybody have to suffer?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, get a job. I don't know that it makes you an asshole. That's just one of the solutions.
Yeah.
It's a temporary thing, you know?
Like, it's not, I would vote for universal health care, obviously, because there's too many people that die because they don't have the medicine to get what they need. And those are hardworking people that have insurance that maybe don't have enough. But for but for some of these people that are able-bodied, I just feel you can get a fucking job somewhere and do something.
You could. I just feel like their point would be, why should I now sacrifice 50 hours of my week just so I can go to the doctor twice a year? You know, with a job. Now, there's other benefits for having a job. There's also things to your detriment, like being able to do comedy as much as you want, mm-hmm. going out of town for gigs, and you know, having the time off to just work on it and get better at it. So you kind of get stuck in this thing where you're getting a little better when you could have been getting a lot better. And I get it from all angles.
Yeah.
But that's just the way it is, unfortunately. And yeah, Medicare for all or single payer or whatever, to me, it was like the no-brainer solution. Like, it doesn't make any sense to be against it at this point.
Right.
But I'm not going to not vote because the candidate who's for it isn't the nominee. Mm-hmm. You know, like, that's, again, there's other issues out there that also get people killed.
Yeah.
You know, there's people dying because they get shot by cops.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't a healthcare situation. It was something else. So
yeah. Right.
So yeah, there's all these things intersect, but that's just the way it is. I mean, you know, it shouldn't be that way, but that's the way it is. And that kind of idealism, I think, is typical for younger people. And then when you get older, you're like, oh yeah, I'm a little kind of calloused by the world now. So I'm just like, do whatever you do to get by, get a job or whatever, you know, the thing is.
And I guess I was thinking about it by myself on the Patreon episode, rambling through it. And it was something that struck me. There's a comic, Kate Willett, who she's a New York comic now, I think.
Yeah.
And she wrote a piece that was featured in Elle, talking about her boyfriend who passed away because he didn't get the proper medical care. And then there was an arguments going around that were saying that she was weaponizing her boyfriend's death to get people to vote for Bernie. And it just got out of hand. I was like, what the fuck? She's just sharing her story.
Yeah, I mean, I saw some of that. I think Ray Sani was kind of caught up in the middle of that.
Yeah.
It's hard to follow. Once those threads get broken on mm-hmm. Twitter, it's like, how much am I going to research this?
Yeah, I was looking at it. And then there's a guy that was, what's his name? Jack Allison, who wrote for, I think he wrote for Kimmel.
Yeah.
He won an Emmy or something, and now he's not doing late night anymore. And he wrote an article about Michael Che, and he's got people going after Che. Che clapped back, and now he's kind of going after Ray. And it's like, oh, these people are more famous than me, blah, blah, blah. But he seems to be going after just the black people. He seems to have a lot of issues with the black writers in comedy. But, you know, that's just from what I see.
But people who push back.
Black people who push back, yeah. And right. So it's just sort of like, I was just kind of mulling over that, you know, what was going on. And it's just like, well, I just looked at it as her, because I like Ray and I like Kate. And so it's just like, I just feel like she's, you know, sharing her story, and she's stumping for Bernie, and so be it, you know? That's her guy.
Yeah, and I think there was kind of a fine point on that argument about, I think it came down to someone else posted, like, piggybacked off it or responded to mm-hmm. Kate's original thing, and then Kate replied saying that person was exploiting the story about the friend who died, and then
okay,
and then Ray said that's not what she did at all, and then Kate might have deleted a tweet. I don't know. Like, okay. Then I just got into the weeds of like just putting a fine point on did this one little thing happen or not. And that was Ray's whole thing. Was like, I'm just talking about this one little thing. I'm not talking about all the other stuff.
Yeah.
And of course, people are like, we don't care. It's Twitter.
Yeah. So there's no nuance in Twitter. Yeah.
Yeah. Just every now and then Twitter becomes Twitter, and it becomes like that thing. And you're just, it's focused on you. It's like Tasmanian devil just going by, and then find somebody else to target, and it focuses on them. And then that guy Jack with Allison or whatever—I mm-hmm. don't know what his deal is.
But, I don't either.
You know, people kind of stick their noses in it. It's, to me, it's like, why is any of this happening?
Yeah,
it doesn't. It doesn't. Again, it doesn't further the conversation. I mean, then like 2 days later, it was like Neil Brennan about the movie Parasite. Like, it's just right. This whole thing about like, oh, now you're up. You're up next. You know,
I feel on like deck. I feel like he's trolling. Part of me feels like he's trolling.
Yeah, I feel like he just doesn't want to let the point go, which is fine. You know, it's his Twitter feed and all uh-huh. that. But what I've started doing now, a lot of looking at all the people who reply, and I'm seeing how many of them have like 8 followers, and they've been on Twitter since, you know, 2011. It's just like, oh, this is just like a nobody, nothing account who's making people mad. Like, there's so much anger right. on Twitter. And it just gets churned up. So it doesn't matter if Ray had a point. I think she might have had a point. It doesn't matter if Kate had a point. It was not about the point anymore at some yeah. point. It's just about, oh, we can just dump out our anger on this.
Yeah.
Because our lives are miserable and we're sad about whatever. And this is our substitute for therapy or drugs. this is how we self-medicate our anger and disgust with life.
God,
is dumping
man.
It on someone else, you know, just backing up the truck and dumping it out onto Twitter.
Yeah, you're right. That's what it seems like, because it's just,
yeah.
you know, I go to Twitter to get some laughs, you know, listen to my podcast or come see me at this place. Maybe I'll talk about The Last of Us Part 2 or some shit. But other than that,
right.
it's a lot, man. And people... I guess you do get some type of dopamine when you get those likes or those retweets, or I told that guy.
Yeah, the whole dunking on thing,
yeah.
you know, from people who have zero athletic ability, like now they get to dunk.
yeah.
like, yeah. you shouldn't be dunking. You can't dunk.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes people will literally, like on purpose, misrepresent something the other person said
mm-hmm.
in order to dunk on them.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, oh, it's not about the conversation. It's about the performance. It's about getting the likes. It's about, oh, I got like 600 likes from that one, you know, and then you live to dunk again because it worked for you.
Yeah.
And you got to forget about your shitty real life for a couple hours.
It's just,
and go yeah. live in this fantasy world where you can dunk in this world, you know? So there's a lot of that. And, you know, remember when the promise of the internet originally was it would connect us all and make us smarter,
right?
And it's literally making us disconnected and dumber. It's like mm-hmm. having the exact opposite effect.
Yeah.
And no matter how much effort people put into continuing to connect and get smarter, because how much information is available, it doesn't stand a chance against the tide of stupidity and mental illness and anger that's coming back the other way, you know.
That's true.
So this whole thing about connecting with people all around the world. That was just the first, like my first AOL chat room. That's what it was. That's what got me to go in it.
It's yeah. Because
people from all around the world
mm-hmm.
could be in here. And turns out people are just pieces of shit everywhere in the world. So
mm-hmm.
why would I, you know, why would I bring myself closer to that? But I check Twitter every day. So, you know, I still get my news from Twitter.
I do too. Yeah.
It's the most immediate thing. I don't really engage much. I don't really reply to anything. Occasionally I'll retweet. And I do check the arguments, though. You know, like if there's a, like that thing with Ray Soddy and Kate Willett and other people that I knew in that
yeah,
back and
right,
forth.
Right.
I still wanted to pass judgment silently.
It just made me think, though. It's just like a weird, because I like following these interesting people and knowing what, you know, what they think and why they like Bernie or this and that. You know, it's just become, I'm glad that more people are involved in the political process. But then when does it become overwhelming? It just feels like it's just, there's just so many candidates. But then Trump opened the door for just about anybody could be president, you know.
Right.
But maybe it is a good thing that we're focused on. I just will feel weird about this campaign, like the Democratic Party just being so, like they're going to Hunger Games each other, and then we got to pick the person that comes out of that, and they're just tearing each other down. It just seems like they don't, I don't know. I'm concerned about that, but I'm going to do my part. Now, what is Super Tuesdays in a couple weeks for me, I think.
Yeah. I have concerns about that too, about like, will these people actually sit out? Will they, because, you know, there's a little bit of that thing too, where they're claiming some things are rigged that, mm-hmm. really aren't rigged, you know. So will they do that? Trump's going to claim anything is rigged where he loses, but so are Bernie supporters.
Yeah.
And just the question is, who will they be in September if Bernie's not the nominee? And Bernie might be the best candidate. Bernie's not a bad candidate at all.
No, he's not. I don't think he,
major problems with Bernie. I think he's probably going to have to pick a vice president who people have a lot of confidence in, because I think Bernie would be a one term, not because he'd be voted out,
because he's old.
83, you know?
Yeah.
And 83 years old starting another term, like you can't count on him to be around and with it and energetic mm-hmm. for a second term. So a lot of it comes out of that too. It's like some of these people are going to have to maybe make their VP choices before there's even a convention to just placate the ones who are saying they're too old. Biden, same deal.
And that's another thing that I'm glad you brought that up. It's just these people are old. That worries me. Like Elizabeth Warren, who I like, she's 70.
Yeah.
It feels like there's one part is like people are going crazy over this thing. And then at the same time, well, it's good that these young people are doing stuff, because every time I go to vote in my neighborhood, it's all these senior citizens that are helping people out, that are, you know, signing you in and making sure you vote. So it's good that young people are involved, because somebody's got to take the mantle, they've got to pass the torch to somebody. So it's good to see people like Kate, and who I just became familiar with, this comic, Jake Flores, who does the Why You Mad podcast with Luisa Diaz. I know that he's like a political guy, and he has a podcast. I think it's called Pod Damn America.
I don't know much about him except for his Twitter wars.
Yeah, that's how I know. And because I just knew him through Luisa, and I just started following him and getting into, you know, the stuff that he's talking about and seeing how he interacts with folks. But it's good that like they were in New Hampshire canvassing and stuff like that. So. At one rate, you got to look at it as like, okay, these are people that are actually backing up their tweets, you know?
Yeah, there are quite a few who are actually like, you know, putting their money where their mouth is, I guess.
Yeah.
And I would think they're going to be pretty reasonable when it comes down to it, because they're not just performing
right.
Bernie fandom. They're actually aware politically of consequences.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if Trump is reelected. So,
yeah,
you know, it's just a matter of because it's hard to tell, like on Twitter or anywhere else, like how many of what are out there. That's why these caucus and primary results are going to be probably pretty surprising to a lot of people, because wherever you go for your information, it's like, oh, it's Bernie's going to win in a landslide, or mm-hmm. it's going to be Bernie and Warren 1 and 2. And then it's like, oh,
Pete.
Mayor Pete, what the fuck? You
know, like, yeah, he just he's got it. I just think he needs more seasoning. He's not ready.
Well, yeah, I mean, but it's like he knows how to look like a politician.
Oh, of course he does.
You know what I mean? Like, he's got that like central casting, except for being gay, which, you know, for the progressive left might be central casting at this point.
Right. Yeah.
But he knows how to talk without saying shit really well.
Mm-hmm.
He knows how to dodge a question really well. He knows how to be succinct. And, you know, he's got all those qualities.
And he knows how to ignore black people. So I think he's killing it, dude.
Right.
So.
Right.
Yeah, man. It's so fascinating to me how just the internet works where, you know, Shia LaBeouf was at the Oscars and he presented with his co-star from this movie called The Peanut Butter Falcon, where he befriends this kid with Down syndrome. Yeah. And they were presenting and Shia was with him and Shia said a line and the kid Zach said a line and he just kind of like was encouraging him and he like kind of chuckled and smiled. And the internet was like blasting him, like Shia hates Down syndrome kids.
Oh, really?
I was like, what the fuck? Like, I was like, yo, I know that I'm a movie nerd, but I know enough to know that Shia LaBeouf, who one of my favorite white actor of all time, rehabilitated his life and his career by doing this movie and actually befriending this kid. They had this real friendship, and on the press tour, they talked about it. So. It's like, what the fuck are you guys getting mad at? And people had to be like, no. These guys are friends. This Shia cares about this kid.
Yeah, he was having a genuine laugh about the moment. He was laughing at. Well, you know, I don't think Twitter comprehends laughing with all that well.
I guess they don't.
It's all about laughing at. And then, you know, they have to kind of mobilize to get somebody. But there's so much of that shit where it's like, oh, guys, they're friends. It's cool. You know, and then the people have to come out and say that about themselves. Like, hey, we're just so everyone knows, nobody meant anything by this. Like, as though Shia LaBeouf would come out in front of a billion people watching the Oscars and laugh at a kid with Down syndrome.
Right.
You know, or I guess a man with Down syndrome.
Yeah.
Like, did people really think that would happen?
I don't know. It feels like they won, and it just goes back to you, what you said about just that unloading that dump truck of like the negativity onto your timeline.
Yeah.
And it's like the internet has so much cool shit to where it's like we're comedians and we make commentary on what goes on in our world, but it's like, Jesus fucking Christ, man. It's not all bad.
Well, then also there's the, there's the overdone celebration when something is mildly okay.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like all these people posting like, this gave me life. It's like, really? That gave you life?
Yeah.
Really? Just some fucking, you know, college gymnast landed a flip and you're cool. You're right. Good. So there's a little bit of that too, where it's like the extra over celebratory. And like the kind of, I don't know what's one's not really in response to the other, but it basically we're living in the age of hyperbole.
Yes.
You know, everything is hyperbolic. Everything is the greatest thing ever. You know, oh, this rapper said Biggie sucks. He's the worst rapper he's ever heard. It's like, you know, like all this exaggeration for no particular reason. And most shit is a lot more muted in the real world.
It is. And you're just like, oh, did you hear about this? What are you talking about? Because nobody at my job. They don't give a shit. Like I can talk to you or Randolph or anybody about something on the phone, or we can podcast about stuff. The stuff that goes on, it doesn't even have to be about comedy. People don't give a shit, dude. Like I can talk to my parents after work and they're like, oh, what did people say about this social event or this cultural moment? They didn't say shit.
Right. Right. And then and there's so much of it where like by the time someone who's not plugged in asks you, you're just like, it's too much to explain. Like I have to take you back a year and a timeline of something.
Yeah,
like,
okay, right.
Back in March last year, so someone put out this diss track, right? And then it's like by the time you get done, it's like explaining a dream to somebody. Like, this is the most boring shit I've ever heard in my life. Like, it's only entertaining to you. So
it's like nobody really talked about Kobe. Like at work, like me and the other black guy in my department talked about it, but nobody else really. It's just been, you know, nobody really, not that many people, you know. But it's all on the internet.
It's on the internet. I mean, some people, like my mother, who doesn't know anything about basketball, but she watches CNN every day.
Yeah,
so she heard about Kobe and I think the daughter who died was a big thing for her. So she was sad about it without even knowing who he was.
Right.
You know, but like even stuff like that, like is the party that's taking place on the timelines is not really it's not real. It's not real life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the celebrations and the, I guess, demonizations, they're all overblown.
Yeah.
And they mean nothing. And, you know, in 2 days, it's Neil Brennan's turn. And 2 days later, it's going to be someone else's turn.
Right.
And then 2 days after that, someone else's turn. And people won't even remember the other shit until someone digs up the receipts in 5 years. Like, yeah. Oh, I'm going to search his feed with the word Jew and see what comes up. He said Jew in a tweet 7 years ago. So oh. that's who you're hiring for your show. You know, shit like that.
Yeah.
And so it'll kind of maybe have a second act, you know, whatever the dragging is. But it's all just performative. That's all. It's just people like saying, taking some of the spotlight and just dragging it over to them. Say, hey, look at me, look at me, look at me for a minute.
Yeah.
Give me my likes. And, you know.
You see that happen. Do you see that happening at comedy shows more? Because last night, the show last night, there was a drunk woman. Because when you do these shows at the Borgata, like, everybody does 20. So it's me. I go up first. It's me, Mike Vecchione, and Joe DeVito. And so I go up, and you kind of have to host it because I'm the first one. And you kind of just like, hey, guys, ba-da-da-da-da, hey. And then you get into the material. And then there was, like, this black woman beside a black guy. I thought it was her boyfriend.
Yeah.
But she was, like, wilding out, and I had to kind of tame her a little bit. And you couldn't really kick her out because she was like in the middle of the front row, and it would have been really awkward. And before she started going crazy, some drunk guy was talking and trying to make reference to a joke that I did like 5 minutes earlier. And I was like, what's going on here, dude? I was like, I'll take care of this. I'll handle the jokes. And there's always like a couple people sometimes where they just heckle. It's not even, and like even the drunk black girl, she was just trying to help. She thought she was helping. It wasn't like, fuck this. She was just like having a good time, but it was like, you need to shut the fuck up.
Yeah, some of that, like their motivations are all different. Like some people do think they're helping or they're just co-signing the joke, you know?
Right.
And it's hard to tell them that they're hurting the thing or they're just in the way. Like, you know, if you see, like, let's say a car is stuck in a ditch and like six big burly dudes are pushing it out and there's like this one little skinny woman like also pushing, like she's not actually helping, you know? But she might even be getting in someone's way and stepping on their feet, but she thinks she's helping. Like, it's like that. It's like, you're actually not helping. I appreciate that you're into the show, you're listening.
Right.
And then you can't really unload on someone like that because then you're the asshole because the crowd doesn't hate them yet.
Yeah. You know? And I think by the end of the show, they kind of turned on those two or there was somebody else. I don't know. But they eventually will turn on those people because those people are trying to have a good time. But I think I think the clientele of like that club or this place, like if you're fucking up, they'll say, hey, what the fuck? You need to shut up. Because we're trying to have a good time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the thing. You've got to make sure the crowd understands. And most crowds have a low tolerance for that shit.
Yeah.
You know, you can see them kind of, because they'll even look at you sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, oh, you do something about this, man? get them out of here?
Cause
shake their heads.
Because you kind of don't want to, like, because the first guy, he shut up after. I was like, I'll handle this. Like, I was like, well, this isn't a town hall meeting, okay? This is not.
Yeah.
And you kind of got to hit them. And then as they fall, you kind of, like, just lay them down.
Right.
And
right.
With women, sometimes it could be a little different. But.
Well, yeah. I mean, you got to, there's a different line to walk. You can say something to a man that you wouldn't say to a woman.
Yeah.
And,
right.
You can't call her a cunt, for example.
Shut up, bitch. Yeah.
Or, yeah, pull up the Snoop Dogg, like, dog-headed bitch, you know, or whatever.
No. Oh, man, the girl dads just kind of had a 180 within, like, the less than a week.
Right, right. Well, it's Snoop has daughters, right? Or at least one.
Yeah, he's got at least one daughter, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, Snoop's been calling women bitches.
I know
for a
you
long
can't.
Time.
That's true. Like, you can't be mad at. It's like that's what he does.
You can't unlearn that in 2 weeks. You know, where's the empathy for that guy? I mean, this is ingrained. This is where he's from.
His daughter's life is set because he called women bitches and hoes.
Right, exactly. But you know, you can't do that to a woman who's heckling. You know, you can't go that far. Yeah. You know, I think most comics have crossed that line accidentally before. Yeah. Especially, I mean, like from a male comic saying something too much to a female heckler is suddenly the crowd's like, "Whoa, okay."
Yeah.
It's okay if you hate this woman, but you can't hate women. All women. You know.
That's actually pretty good. We just hate you. Not everybody right. else. You are the one that we're singling out that we hate.
Yeah, exactly. And it's otherwise, I'm an ally.
You just have to.
It's not funny. With you, lady.
Yeah.
So I'm an ally for all the other women who can't hear the show because you're talking. You know, you gotta align yourself. You gotta ostracize that one. But we've all probably gone too far with a heckler before, and then realize, oh, the crowd doesn't hate them yet. Now I'm the asshole.
Yeah, I kind of pay more attention to. I think I saw Bill Burr do it a few years ago. Like what I see him do it in Long Island at the. I fucking forget. It's a theater in the Round. It's in Long Island. And like he was doing a set and then somebody said something. He just said, "What did you say?" And he he would just like answer the person and just kind of have a little bit of a dialogue. Then he'd shut him up. But then he said like before then he used to always like, "What the fuck are you saying?" you know, like you let that anger. Because sometimes you had to let him sound stupid. Like I remember 2 weeks ago. I was doing a show at Levity, and it was like a showcase show. And somebody said something, and I said, "What did you say?" And then she didn't say anything. I said, "Oh, now you're going to turn into Helen Keller. Now we can't. Now you're going to be quiet." And then that got a laugh, you know, instead of just being like, "Well, fuck you, bitch."
Right. Yeah, but we all... That's the thing. We all bring our own baggage to it. So
yeah.
You're not just yelling at that heckler. You're yelling at the lady from last week.
Or your mom.
The dude from a month ago.
Or your mom or dad.
Yeah, exactly. Like that's, you're bringing your own issues. And it's kind of like the people on Twitter. You're dumping them out on this drunk person who didn't realize they were, you know, hurting the show.
And I try hard to do that. Even at my day job, I try to not let what's going on with me affect how I treat people around me. But other people don't do that. And it was just kind of like I had an incident last week at work where I was just like, "You guys realize that this person is not polite, and this person is mean and has a bad attitude."
Yeah.
Now that something else came up, now she has the leeway to do this. I'm like, no, that's not right.
That's when you got to pull out the receipts.
Yep. And that's what I did.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I did. I was like, "Look, everybody goes through shit. But I'm not going to dump that on everybody else, especially at work." I was like, "I'm not going to let you motherfuckers see me weak."
Right.
When I found out my uncle died on a Sunday, like he died on December 15th, and I checked on my mom's brother, and I, you know, there's like a little hallway you can go out to like make a phone call or something. And normally I go to my car, and I was talking to my mother about it. And she said, "Oh, you know, well, you know, he went to church." And I started just like fucking losing it. And I was like, "I got to call you back." And I just went out. And I just went out to my car and then called her back. By the time I was like, "But I'm not letting those fuckers see me do that."
Right.
You know, shit, man. It's fucking assholes. Not at that place. Not at that place. Not my bosses. My bosses are nice, but some of these people, some of these fuckers, they're not the best of us.
Yeah, you don't want to give them something they can use against you later.
Yeah, these are people that asked, "Oh, do you still do comedy?" "No, I quit."
Right.
"No, I quit." "Oh, it just didn't work out for you, huh? It was too hard?"
Yeah.
It's like,
why even ask him? Are you going to come to a show? Like, you're not asking for any reason.
Yeah, like you've never come to a show. I don't want you to come to a show.
Right.
You know, like yeah. there's been time I've been on TV and stuff. I would never fucking tell them.
Right.
And now some people will have seen me on something and talk about it in the break room, but I, you know, it's, but let's shift gears. Sports. The Wizards are a ninth seed. I didn't realize that.
I didn't either. I've watched less than five Wizards games this year. I am not, they're not grabbing me this yeah. year. And normally I watch, you know, I watch a lot of Wizards games. Or
and
at
you
least
go
I
a couple,
up.
You go to some too, right?
Yeah, when we lived closer, we would get like the partial season ticket, the six game
That's
package.
Right,
we
yeah.
We got that a couple times. Or just in general, just randomly, you know, you could go on StubHub day of and get like a pretty good seat,
mm-hmm.
you know, make it a spontaneous like, hey, it's 6 o'clock. Let's just get in the car and go to the Wizards game. It's harder to do that now where we live because we're further out in the suburbs.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, you know, the it's just, I don't know. There's a lot. Obviously, John Wall's hurt.
Mm-hmm. When is he going to come back? When is he due back?
There's all these videos keep getting posted of like, he's in the gym again. He's like, you know, shows him taking like a little two dribble, you know, flash to his left and go up and shoot and make the shot and all that. Durant, they're doing the same thing with Durant now. They're showing yeah. those videos of him.
He better not fucking come back this year.
Yeah, but it's an Achilles. I mean, even if Wall comes back, he was on like his, what, fifth knee surgery. He tore his Achilles while he was recovering from a knee surgery.
Oh.
He was at home and he like slipped on something.
Jesus.
And he tore his
Christ.
Achilles while his knee was, you know, not that far after surgery.
Oh.
And so, you know, he was already kind of banged up. He was already on multiple knee surgeries. He was already getting to his late 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And so the time when he maybe starts slowing down a little bit, and then add on top of that the Achilles, which is like the worst injury for a basketball player.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what's going to happen when he comes back. I don't know how good he's going to be. His game relied so much on just explosiveness.
Yeah.
So meanwhile, I mean, they got Bradley Beal obviously locked in for a while. And that rookie, Hachimura, whatever his name is, he seems to be a pretty good draft pick so far.
Okay, that's good.
So I don't know. I mean, in theory, if Wall kind of comes back close to what he was, you know, they could fill out that roster in a couple of years from now, be a pretty good team. But it's the Wizards. I don't have faith in them.
You know, yeah. Like
they're gonna sign someone to a max deal that shouldn't have it, or trade someone who's a great young prospect for an old washed up person, you know, with name recognition. They're gonna do something to fuck it all up.
Yeah.
And also on top of that, another reason I'm not watching a lot of games, it's good they got rid of Steve Buckhantz
calling
as the announcer.
Uh-huh.
And it's just some, I don't know, I can't connect with the new team. They're just not very good.
Wow.
So
I always keep like you to hear your updates when I have you on, because you said yeah. One of the most profound things you ever said.
Yeah.
We were at the, what's that bar across from the draft house? Is that still there?
Oh, Pete Brennan's. No, they closed down.
Damn, what's there now?
I don't know if anything's there now, but there's like a beer garden right next door.
Oh, okay. Well, I want to, maybe we get to that later. But we were over there. We were at Pete Brennan's, and you were just saying like, I think maybe we were talking about Robert Griffin, but you're just like, yeah, DC just, you know, they don't know how to treat superstars. And I was like, huh, yeah.
Yeah,
they don't. That makes sense. And I just kept that with me for what, maybe the 5-6 years it's
yeah.
been since you said that. And it just
yeah.
seems like they don't. I mean,
they don't, you know, they don't, except for maybe like, especially black stars. Cause I mean, Ovechkin
mm-hmm.
is a king.
Yeah.
You know, the baseball team, you know, they've won titles, but the baseball team, Bryce Harper was pretty highly regarded overall. People kind of looked the other way when he struck out a lot.
Yeah.
But yeah, like black stars, you know, basically football and basketball, which are, you know, the two sports that I follow the most.
Mm-hmm.
There's always been like this, you know, oh, he's doing Subway commercials when he should be studying. Like, no, it's not at all the case. I mean, they looked the other way a little bit when the Redskins were winning Super Bowls. Those teams were kind of the hook. Like, they didn't have stars.
Right.
Charles Mann did a lot of Diet Coke commercials.
Yeah.
No one said shit. But anytime they have a player I guess, especially basketball and football, who's kind of outspoken, who gets a lot of media attention. Gary Clark back in the old Redskins heyday, like they just get too much hate. Like no one circles the wagons and embraces these guys. They just get hate. John Wall, people were his third or fourth year. He's a bust. Trade him. Come on. Yeah. Are you watching these fucking games?
Yeah. He's playing his ass off and he's like trying to, I don't know. I just remember some interview that he did or he was in the locker room and he was trying to make everybody step up. He's like holding everybody accountable. Like,
yeah,
yo, we're fucking losing, you know, like we need to do better. He wasn't used to losing like that.
Yeah. And DC likes what they like is that unassuming lunch pail, blue collar type guy. But as soon as a person becomes like a star, like Bradley Beal is kind of that just show up, work hard guy, and he doesn't get a lot of flack. But as soon as someone becomes like, you know, a star, someone who's going on the Tonight Show, for example, then, yeah, people start to turn on him and talk shit about him. And they literally pull that classic move of he needs to be studying. What's he doing on talk shows? Needs to be studying. Chris Webber got that.
Yeah.
You know, it's just. You can go down the line and see anyone who gets that star treatment. Clinton Portis, Robert Griffin, a lot. I mean, granted, people loved him. People celebrated him that first year. But even that first year, people were already saying, like, he's just a rookie. Doesn't need to be doing Subway commercials. You know?
Yeah.
So John Wall has his own shoe. He hasn't even won a playoff game yet. So, like, that has nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
No. One has nothing to do with the other.
Yeah.
And for some reason, DC sports fans, again, particularly basketball and football, just shit all over stars in this town.
Yeah.
You know, can't wait to call to trade them. Can't wait.
How do you feel about Ron Rivera and his regime taking over the Redskins?
The thing is, there's no optimism left for the Redskins for me, because even if they hire all the right people, it's going to be dysfunctional. Because Dan Snyder's the owner, and he's going to limit their powers in some ways and maybe give them leeway in ways where he shouldn't. And so any coaches, you know, anyone who's like a big name who comes in, who's going to bring like a new attitude, like Ron Rivera, like, you know, famously, I guess locally, he came in and he was like, we got to get rid of these ping pong tables. So it's like, oh, a new culture. They're not going to be able to play ping pong.
Did he really said that?
Well, I don't know what he literally said, but that's literally what happened. Like, they came in and he was like, ping pong. Got rid of the ping pong tables.
That's hilarious.
You guys need to be studying. You can't be playing ping pong. So he's turning into one of those fans. And so, you know, there's all these culture changes with the Redskins. Like, every 4 years, it's like, oh, he's too tough.
Uh-huh.
And we're going to change the culture and we get players coach in. And now we got ping pong tables are back. And then, you know, they didn't throw those away. They just put them in a room.
So, you won't see. Nobody ever goes in this room. They won't see.
Yeah. Because when they fire Ron Rivera, they're going to get a players coach. And he's going to be like, oh, ping pong. He's going to just wheel him back out again.
It's so funny to me, like, how – so Dwayne Haskins, they're like – I mean, they threw him – I'm watching ESPN. They're like, they threw him to the Lions. And, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if he'll ever play again. And you know how I am about black quarterbacks.
Yeah.
And the segment before, they were like – I mean, I think just Mitchell Trubisky needs another chance. I mean, he was working hard. And I was like, no, the Bears should have gotten Deshaun Watson. That's what they should have picked him. And they probably wouldn't be in this situation.
Yeah. And every team should have got Lamar Jackson because he went like at the end of that round, the first round or whatever, including the Redskins. But this is a classic Redskins, too. They'll find a quarterback that they want to build around, then they'll change coaches.
Yeah.
And then the coach, they'll be like, oh, he's not a Ron Rivera guy. You know, they said that about RG3 when Jay Gruden came. Well, he's not a Jay Gruden guy. So he's got to find his own guy. And then, so what, his career is over now? And
yeah.
So it's just, it's done. He's a system quarterback 1 year in. Or in RG3's case, it was his third, I guess, 3 years in. But, you know, they always like do that. So Haskins, they were saying that from the beginning, like he hadn't played yet. And they were like, why hasn't he played yet? Does he suck or something? It's like a lot of rookies don't play yet. You know, a lot of them sit out for half a season or a whole season and it's no big deal. And I don't know if he's any good or not, but I think he got better at the end of the year.
That's what they were saying. And even Mike Greenberg, he was, I just looked up Haskins on, just Googled him, and it says ESPN's Mike Greenberg believes the Redskins are ruining Haskins.
Right. Yeah, that's what they do.
Yeah. So
I love it when I see, like, I'm so happy for former Redskins and former Wizards who go to other teams. Who's like, get the fuck out.
Did you see, like, did you see Breshad Breeland get that pick in the Super Bowl?
I saw the highlight of it, and that's the thing. Like, I realized when I looked at the Super Bowl stuff, I don't care so much when a coach gets out of this horrible, you know, quicksand. Because I didn't care about Shanahan in San Francisco, like Kyle Shanahan. You know, he was a coach of the Redskins. It was dysfunctional. Yeah. But I'm always really happy. And there's two defensive backs on Kansas City. Because they got, was it Kendall Fuller, the guy they traded in the Alex Smith trade?
Okay.
So they have two defensive backs who are former Redskins who got to win a Super Bowl. And anytime I see a former Redskin or a former Wizard on another team that's like a contender now, because there are a lot. JaVale McGee's a former Wizard. You know? They're all over the league, and then sometimes they're all over the playoff rosters. And you see like, oh, that's right. They were in this horrible, dysfunctional situation.
Mm-hmm.
And good for them that they got out. RG3, happy for, even though he's a backup.
Yeah,
you know, he's, and when he comes in, it's like mop up time, if anything,
right?
Or like a gadget play. But yeah, like all these guys, Breeland, Kendall Fuller, or even just people that I kind of forgot about, and I'll hear their name, you know, the for like in basketball, like, oh, there's a highlight with Bogdanovich, wasn't he on the Wizards? Oh, good for him.
Yeah,
good for him for getting out, you know.
Yeah,
Trevor Ariza, good for him for getting out.
And Rip Hamilton.
Yeah, Rip Hamilton, maybe eventually Bradley Beal and John Wall, because they were already talking about last year trading both of them,
you know,
as a package to Miami or something. I don't know if that was ever serious, but yeah, I'm happy for all those guys, because you only get like a 10-year career if you're lucky, maybe a little more than that, maybe a little less than that.
Yeah.
And they got to like waste, like this guy Dwayne Haskins has to waste 3 or 4 years. Even Kirk Cousins, who a lot of people hated on it on the Redskins, I'm like, good for him. For getting that money and getting the fuck out of this city.
And he's doing well.
Yeah, I mean, he's not doing highest paid quarterback in the league well. But he did at least push it forward, because his contract was almost all guaranteed, and quarterbacks, NFL players generally don't get that. So the next crop who come up in free agency are going to say, well, we want that. We want a fully guaranteed contract. So, you know, he's helping players in some sense, but all these guys, Haskins now has to get stuck in this Dan Snyder loop for the next 3 years, and then, you know, get dragged by the media and, you know, all these people, he sucks, trade him and all this other shit, because he got drafted by this horrible organization. And when he gets out, even if he's just a backup somewhere, I'll be like, good for you, man.
Yeah.
Good for you getting out.
Now, what do you think about this about Philip Rivers? He cut ties with the Chargers. What do you think is going to happen for him? Like, Brady's apparently, is Brady a free agent?
I think technically he is. Yeah. And he's, and that's the thing. Philip Rivers is 38.
Yeah.
And Brady's like 41. Mm-hmm. So like, I don't know where you can go when you're that old. And Peyton Manning found Denver at late in his career.
Yeah.
You know, what are the odds you're going to find a situation like that, a team that literally is a quarterback away?
And somebody that's going to block for you.
Yeah. I mean, Philip Rivers isn't very mobile. He's old. I mean, he can still, I don't know, I guess I haven't looked at his numbers. I don't really watch it like that anymore, but I guess he's still decent. Mm-hmm. I guess he can still play a little bit, but just, you're in Florida, retire, man. You got all the money. You know, what do you need to do this again for?
They're trying to say he's got to take care of his kids, but I'm sure he's got money. I'm sure he's fine.
He's got to be loaded unless he fucked up.
I don't think he did. I doubt that he did. I don't know.
That was when Mark Brunell was on the Redskins, his last couple seasons.
Did he fuck up?
He apparently, according to the reports at the time, he lost like $50 million in bad investments.
Oh shit!
Or he lost like everything, and he had made $50 million in his career, and he basically had lost almost all his money in like shitty investments.
Was he on that broke documentary?
I don't think he was.
Okay,
I don't think they talked about him.
Okay,
but he needed like those last couple years of paychecks to kind of set himself up,
damn,
you know, for the retirement. I don't know if he lost literally all $50 million, but that was the kind of story. It was like, he's made $50 million and he's broke or he's in debt. And all these guys, you know, they invest in, you know, whatever, public storage units.
Yeah.
You know, it's a gold mine. And then they throw all their money into it and lose all of it.
They're throwing them up for some reason around me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're building a lot of, like, high-rises. Like, I guess, like, kind of like what they did in Arlington, like, by the draft house. Like, they're throwing these places up. And you wonder who's moving into those.
Yeah.
But I'm guessing people are getting priced out of Brooklyn and Manhattan, so they're coming over to my neck of the woods now.
Yeah, they're making that deal in their minds. Like, you know, Jersey's nice.
Yeah, I mean, I like it. I mean, I couldn't afford to live in I probably could have been all right in Queens, but I couldn't afford to live in Manhattan, even like uptown when I first moved.
I mean,
yeah,
I was just saying, I lived in Queens, but there was no way I would ever live in Manhattan.
Yeah.
You know? It would be impossible back then or now.
All the comedians and actors I know live in Queens for the most part, if they don't live like in Brooklyn somewhere.
Yeah.
I
guess you can live in Manhattan if you want to live in like a closet and you got to share a bathroom with like 15 other people and
you know,
live in some kind of fire hazard building that's technically condemned. But
yeah, I like to be comfortable. I'd rather be, you know, and then I don't have roommates and stuff, but it's like you have to have some kind of comfort in the pursuit of just trying to be, I don't know, in the pursuit of fucking happiness, whatever the fuck that is.
Well, yeah, it depends on what you need. I mean, some people would say, those people who don't have that job and don't have that health insurance, they'll say you got to have your back against the wall. You got to have sacrifice.
Yeah.
That's what motivates you, and too comfortable makes you less motivated. And there might be some truth to that, but ultimately what makes you happy?
And yeah,
if you're going to be super motivated and scraping together every $15 or $50 set you can and broke, you might be advancing, but you also might be super unhappy.
Yeah.
You know, so there's that balance too. It's like, well, you know, if I'm happy, then I'm better as a comic, or if you're an actor, you might be better if you're happy.
Mm-hmm.
Or you might be better if you're walking around with angst and you're really unhappy. I guess whatever works for you. But
yeah.
You know, I'm sure some people are better songwriters when they're mad or when they're hungry, you know, creative juices get flowing. But some people need happiness and need contentment in order to thrive. And so, but yeah, there's a lot of people who I think just say, nope, you got to live in that closet. You got to eat ramen noodles.
You
know, for 5 years and never see a doctor. And that's how you get better, you know?
I don't know what the hell I've done. I mean, I don't know, Andy. I don't know.
Nobody knows.
It's like whatever works for you. I just think, man, like, I don't know. I saw my parents get up and work every day. And then being an artist that lived in Chicago and trained out there, all those people had jobs. And I guess that was the way where it would be. And I've said this countless times. I said it a couple weeks ago when I had this actor on, David Gregory, where sort of like you would go to work, you'd have your day job, whatever it was, and then you go to rehearsal at 6 o'clock from 6 to 10. You go to rehearsal until the play opens, you're running the show from Thursday to Sunday. And that was just kind of what the grind was. So it didn't seem odd for me to just like be somebody that had a job. And it made those times count. I remember you telling me years ago where you would say, yeah, we used to only have like one open mic or at some place. And so we made sure that the jokes count. We couldn't fuck around. So when you get on stage, you don't fuck around. When you know you got a job and you have to be up in the morning, you make your stage time work for you. Like I always took that from you, where it's just like quality of the show and of the shows that you're doing, of the spots, not necessarily the quantity of it. And some
you want to maximize the quantity as much as you can, but
right.
you want to make sure you approach it the right way. And
yeah,
with acting, I mean, you know, generally people don't go on the road as actors the way comics can go on the road.
Right.
You might travel, but chances are it's city centric. And
yeah,
comedy scenes over the last, I don't know, at least 10 years all over the country have become more centered around cities. You know, mm-hmm. the sort of shitty road gig, drive 5 hours to play a bar in West Virginia kind of thing doesn't really exist anymore. But in the cities, even like the second cities, like DC, you know, the smaller cities, there's stage time every night now and multiple shows every night.
Yeah.
And if you hustle, you can get quality and quantity, especially in these, there's so much interest in comedy. These cities, there's crowds that show up, there's hot shows, there's hierarchies and all these things just locally. And those comics, because they don't have to go on the road, can keep that job longer, you know?
Yeah.
And what happened, like when I was coming up, you know, those first 2 years, maybe 2 to 4 years, when you're still kind of trying to figure out if this is, if you're going to be a comic long term, like you want to, but you don't know if you're ready yet. You don't know if you're good yet. And when I was coming up, even in those first 2 years, if you wanted more stage time, you had to go on the road a lot.
Yeah.
Which means you had to have a job like bartending, or for me, delivering pizzas,
mm-hmm.
or temping or whatever. You basically had to, and people would quit. They would quit their job in an office because it wouldn't allow them to drive to Huntington, West Virginia to play a bar with a mechanical bull in it. You know, like they would quit their job. They would lose health insurance.
Jesus.
Because you were trying to figure out comedy. You're trying to grow as a comic. And the only way to do it and get enough stage time to do it was to have a job that was flexible.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you would have is, even in those first couple years, 2 to 3 or 4 years, you'd have people basically quitting a stable job, going into an unstable job, losing health insurance, racking up thousands and thousands of miles on their car, fucking up their credit, going into debt, credit score in the tank, you know, eating on the road, which makes your health worse, you know, eating at gas stations all the time, and having these gaps in your resume. So that, let's say you're 2-3 years in, you're like, okay, I'm good at this. I'm committed to this. I want to move to New York now or whatever. When you moved to New York, you had this huge gap in your resume. You couldn't get a good day job maybe, or it would be a lot harder.
Right.
You didn't have any money. You were broke. You hadn't been able to stockpile money because you were just living on shitty road gig money and bartending. And you would be a less healthy and maybe less happy person. And I think the benefit now is, at least if you want, you can just stay in your city. You can stay in DC, for example.
Yeah.
Keep your day job, keep your health insurance, keep a decent income so you can throw money into the bank to get ready for that move. And then when you're 2-3-4 years in, whatever it might be, and you're thinking, okay, I want to do this. I'm good at this. I'm ready to move. Well, you have a resume with no gaps. You have a good credit score. You have a 401k, which you wouldn't have had otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
You have things that help you move more easily and give you more comfort when you move.
Right.
You can qualify for a lease. You don't have to sign some napkin and live in someone's closet, you know? And so like people now, at least, and not everyone now does that. Some people do quit and become a bartender or whatever, so they can pursue comedy more. The only real sacrifice now that you have to make, some people will not advance in their office job because if they take on a higher position, now you got to work till 6 every day. You got to work till 6:30. You got to get in earlier and you can't. So you maybe stay at the bottom of the ladder in your office longer than you normally would, you know, otherwise, but you still, again, have stability and you have healthcare and you're not killing yourself. You're not destroying your car. You're not destroying your credit and your bank account. And you're developing as a comic. And so comics now at least have that available to them.
Yeah.
Keep your job, stay in your city, and you can still get on every night. You know, and when I was coming up, we did. People would fuck up their entire lives, you know, to go do road gigs. And sometimes to the point where when they wanted to claw back into like a real job situation, they just couldn't. They didn't have any skills anymore. If you're working in any kind of tech field around computers, you know, you take 3, 4, 5 years off, that shit's passed you by. You don't know what the new shit is.
Yeah.
And so people would, and they were just, you know, a year in the comedy, basically open micers, still trying to figure out comedy and making this huge commitment to fuck up their lives for the next few years just in case comedy works for them. And now you don't have to. You can keep that job. You can go to New York and keep that job and stay in those cities, and you don't have to go drive to, you know, Marietta, Ohio,
mm-hmm.
to basically stand in the corner of a bar with no stage, no spotlight, two jokes.
TV still on and shit. Yeah.
TV still on. You get $100. You don't even get free food. You get 15% off chicken tenders.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to eat at Sheetz twice, once there and once back.
Oh man. You know?
So it makes, if you're happier and healthier, you might be better at this. And now at least you have the option to be happier and healthier while you pursue it.
Yeah.
Or you can say, I need to sacrifice. I need to go, you know, I need to be a dog walker or whatever. That's fine too, but you don't mm-hmm. have to. And we all sort of had to do that on some level.
Yeah. I see a lot of peers that are my age that are making it work for them. And like they've done albums, they've written books.
Yeah.
They've done like cool shit. And it's like, it can be done. And like, I think I'm living proof of that. There's like comics like Selena Kopic that do it, just to shout some people out that I know, you know, like
yeah.
Katie Compa. And these are women.
Promote women.
Phoebe Robinson did it. Like, she left her job when it was the right time.
Yeah.
Got to mention a black woman, you know, trying to cover my bases.
How come you didn't mention black women?
You know, but, you know, I see it being done, you know. So it's just like,
yeah,
I just kind of want that for everybody else to like just to, you know, now people are, it's like it was at a time where it seemed like it was a niche. Is it a niche thing? Or no, it's not. That's not the right term. But it seemed like more people are admitting that people have day jobs, or they have parents, you know, giving them money, or they come from money or something that they, you know, yeah. they talk about, you know, they don't have money, but they live in a great neighborhood, or they always have cool clothes, or they never really yeah. do the road, but they just find themselves like in the scene and all this shit going on. It's just like a weird thing that people are just now starting. I had somebody tell me in LA, people don't admit that they have day jobs.
Oh, really?
Like, yeah. It's like, that's, I was like, wow, really?
I love that. The sort of, especially with comedy. 'Cause it's like, it's all about honesty, man.
Yeah. It's like, yeah. It's on, like, man. What the fuck? You know, I don't get yeah. to, like, I don't get to do certain gigs if I don't, have a day job. A lot of the shows that I do, you know, it's just like, you have to yeah. have money to do these shows. Like, you have to have money to tour. They don't tell you that.
Also, who are you fooling? Like, you know,
yeah.
what you're trying to tell people is, I'm good enough at comedy that I was able to quit my day job. That's why I don't have a day job. If you're right. telling people you don't have, if you're not wanting to admit it, you're trying to present yourself as someone who's higher up
mm-hmm.
in comedy that doesn't need a day job. But the moment they book you, they're going to see that you're lying.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to be like, oh, this guy's not, he's not a day job. He's not quit your day job level funny. What's he talking about? So you get one, you can con your way into the occasional spot, but it's not going to be, you're not going to get rebooked.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's just, I remember when I first started, I remember there was like someone who walked in and said, I'm a headliner. And he convinced the person to put him on this open mic. And he was terrible. He's an open micer.
Yeah.
But he pretended he was in from out of town as a headliner. I've seen that move before, too. Like, I feature a lot on the road, and you put him on stage and
they bomb.
Clearly done comedy like six times ever. It's like, okay, you got me tonight, but now I'm never going to put you on again.
Yeah.
You know, so what did that accomplish?
Yeah, you know? it's a weird thing. Like, it just seemed like, and it wasn't until like I started doing like SAG gigs where, you know, the other actors who were like day players, they say, oh, what's your survival job? And I was like, oh, that's what it is. You know right. what I mean? Because I never had that vocabulary till like 3 years ago.
Right.
You know, it was just like, oh, yeah. So I do this and I'm a social worker and, you know, I got this gig, happy to get it. And, you know,
right.
I'm going to keep trying to plug away. And that's what most people do. But like, they don't see, like, they only, it's like when, you know, you have a family member that says like, oh, I saw Kevin Hart's, he's great. And he, yeah. you know, he's funny. I like, you know, I'm not trying to shit on you. You know, that you do you have the relative, I don't know if you have this, but just like I'll have relatives or friends that aren't in the business where they'll say like, oh, well, I saw, you know, Sebastian Maniscalco. He's great. You yeah. know, when they you tell them, oh, I'm doing a show at some place and they'll talk yeah. about somebody more famous than you. And, you know,
it's yeah, just, like the one they're trying to relate to you. It's like, yeah. it's like when you say I'm from a city and they say, do you know John? You know, like,
yeah,
they're trying to kind of meet you somewhere in the middle.
They always go for the one percenter in your industry.
Yeah, right.
It's like, no, it's like, yeah, somebody asked me, did I know who he was? I said, I know who he is. I don't know him. I know the first time that I worked at the Borgata, he was in the first week of selling out the event center, which holds yeah. like 3,000 people. And he did like 10 or 15 shows.
Yeah.
And of those, you know, it's like he had a residency at the casino in a 3,000 seater.
Right.
Like, it's insane.
Right.
You yeah. know, but yeah.
Do you know him? Is he yeah. your friend? See,
it's like, nah, no, I don't know. And then sometimes people, because I think comedy, you kind of feel, you rub shoulders with a lot of the heavyweights more than you would in acting for the most part, where like yeah. you get to work with some of these people and some people try to shit on your career or try to make a snide comment. Before Louis got canceled, one of the coworkers like, oh, that Louis guy is pretty funny.
Yeah.
I said, yeah, I worked with him once. And they're like, yeah. oh, really? You did?
Right.
Yeah. It was like, I just, you know, I sit in this cubicle near you, but I do shit when I'm not there, when right. I'm not here, you know?
Well, it's almost like they're trying to check where you are as a comic.
Right.
You know, like, do you yeah. know this guy? Oh, you do that? Okay. That now you're legitimate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now I'm going to take you seriously as a comic. What about this guy? Do you know him? And then, you know, they'll try to find someone that it's impressive for them to know.
And then have you ever gotten this? I had someone from work come out to see me, and she has seen me before or whatever, but it had been like a few years ago, and she saw me recently, and I had left a ticket for her, but you never know if people are going to actually come.
Yeah.
And so I didn't see her after the show. And then she texted me like 2 or 3 hours after the show and was like, oh my God, you were so good. I was like, well, why didn't you tell me you were here? I would have came out and talked to you. Oh, I just yeah. feel like you're a superstar. And it's just like, I fucking work with you. You know me.
I mean, I have worked with Louis C.K. But that's I've worked with
Louis,
there.
You know, but it's like, you know me. You could have said, I would love to speak to you, you know?
Right. You know, well, they're in your world now. They don't know if they have access to you at the comedy club.
I kind of feel like that sometimes when I come to see somebody that I know that they're in a yeah. show, or you don't want to bother them, or like I've had friends that have been in play, even other comics. We're like, yeah, I want to say hi, but I don't want to. Yeah. You don't okay, feel well, like you don't feel like a creep.
Just want to say hi. Just I'm gonna go back out there now. I don't belong.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's I don't know. It's fucking weird. So I kind of know how she felt, but it's like, yo, you know me.
Right.
You know, we shared bagels before. So
right.
It's not
well, now things are different. She saw the power.
I guess so.
The power of Chris Lambert. You know, she didn't know that you had that in you.
I guess not.
You're never funny at work.
And I'm not.
Right.
I let everybody, there's a lot of things you could say, but it's just like, I just let everybody else have it. Sometimes I get a couple off where it's just like in conversation and make people laugh. And I'm like, yeah. Got them. But
I don't work. I work from home, but in general, when I'm around non-comics, I don't try to, you know, be the life of the party. If there's a funny guy, sometimes you can tell like, oh, this group has the funny guy and it's that guy.
Yeah.
I'll let that guy shine. You know, yeah. I'm not going to jump in. And plus, around groups of strangers like, that guy might be the best because he's got inside jokes. He knows he can do the impression of so-and-so's mother really well. And,
mm-hmm.
and you know, I'm over here trying to riff on politics. Yeah, it's not yeah. going to work anyway. It's not my room.
Oh,
but I'm totally fine with letting, like, the non-comic have the floor, even though I'm the comic in the room, you know?
Oh, God, yeah. Like, I dim my light all the time there. It's kind of sad, but it's true. Like in public, you just kind of, and I think when you're not a celebrity and you're a comic and stuff, and you know, you kind of that's kind of what helps you. I mean, I got towed earlier this year, first week in January, and I went to the impound to get my car. And it's like, oh, what happened? The one of the ladies was like, oh, you're so nice. You're just so nice. Oh, you're so respectable. And I mean, obviously, I was upset and pissed that my car got towed, but I'm still around. These are police officers. There's this, and so I'm not gonna, you know, go crazy or anything. But and she said, I said, yeah, you know, I was parked in the wrong spot. It was my fault, but I didn't see the sign. But it was basically my fault. And and I was like, I was doing a comedy show, and I got. And she said, oh, you're a comedian. I was like, yeah. Well, tell me a joke. It's not gonna be funny. This will be part of a joke one day, but just not right now. You know. But yeah. So it's just one of those things where
that's the worst. When they say, tell me a joke.
Yeah. Can't.
It's like you got me. I'm stumped. I got nothing.
It's like you got to dim the lights a little bit. Maybe you can have a couple drinks or, you know that you're coming to something. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, and
the tow truck company cancels you.
Yeah.
Because of your joke.
Mm-hmm. Or they just, they add tack on $50.
Right. Exactly.
I got to actually pay for the ticket. I got to pay for that. It was $180 when they told me to get it out, $188 or something. And then I think they tacked on like another $90. So I got to fucking pay that.
This is New York?
This is New York, yeah.
Yeah, it's classic.
Almost 13 years of living in that area and never got a ticket. Never got towed, but until, you know, this 2020.
Everyone in New York is trying to get into your pockets.
Yes.
They're trying to get a little bit of the money out of your pocket. Mm-hmm. Everyone.
And she's like, catch a fucking criminal, bro.
They all want to charge you for whatever it is, a little more than
usual. It's I love it and I hate it at the same time. It's just one of those where you like when I'm driving in, it's still never lost on me. I don't know if you ever felt that when you were living in New York, where it's just like, I'm in fucking New York.
I mean, I like New York fine, but yeah, there were definitely times that I'd be like, come on, man, this is so impractical. There's a lot of stuff that's super convenient, but
yeah,
there's a lot of stuff that's impractical and no one seems to care. That's the other thing. They're just like, greatest city in the world. Like, really? No one has central air.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
Yeah.
It doesn't even get hot. It's 95 degrees. Of course it gets hot.
And I guess I feel that I understand that 100% because like living in Chicago, it was different. Whereas like I was in my 20s and I'm in the city and I felt the same way about Chicago. Even though like the Maryland, D.C. area is a metropolis. I mean, it's just a smaller version, but it's a city. It's a major area. But then at the same time, moving to a city like Chicago was like, wow, I can't believe I'm acting in Chicago or I'm living in a big city.
Yeah.
I still had that feeling. But then I was like, I was telling a cousin of mine in North Carolina, I was like, yeah, dude, you should live in a major city while you're in your 20s and enjoy it. And then you see what it's like. And then when you want to settle down, it's okay to move to the suburbs because you've experienced what you've experienced in your 20s in the city. You know,
but
you can always have direct access to getting into the city wherever you are, you know.
Right. You don't have to be far from the city.
Yeah. Because people always think that like Jersey is like, you know, I always say, dude, I always have the joke where people are like, yeah, let me know when you're in town and you can do my show. I was like, I'm in town, dude. I'm 30 minutes away. Just book me. I'll get there.
Yeah. It's probably faster for me than for you coming from the subway.
It definitely is. So that's just one of those things. Just let me know when you're in town again. All right, man. Well, I got to get to the show, man. But Andy, this has been a fucking delight. And thank you for doing this. Can you plug some stuff? This will go up this weekend.
Well, the one big thing I'm going to plug is I'm going to be at Magoobie's Joke House.
Nice.
In Timonium, Maryland, just north of Baltimore, 2 weeks from now, February 27th, 28th, and 29th. I'll be there opening for Robert Kelly.
Cool.
And that's kind of that's the big one that I want to promote. I'm trying to, I just bought a new camcorder. I'm going to record the shows and I might do some closed captioning.
You sound very enthusiastic about that.
Well, I don't want to get too enthusiastic because you never know with that stuff. Like it might not work out. It might not sound good. It might not look good. The crowd might be weird. And, you know, so.
But you've had stuff to go viral though. So,
but not much. Like I need to make more of that effort. I need to actually lug my camera around and my tripod around, or even just my phone, mm-hmm. and actually get some of the stuff on tape. Cause I have so many great moments get lost in the ether.
Yeah.
Heard by the 14 people in the room and that's it forever. So
yeah.
Why not put it on the internet?
Yeah.
You know? So, but yeah, that's, I haven't been to Magoobies in a while, but that's, those are big shows. I hope they work out good. You know, Robert Kelly's going to draw well, so.
Yeah, he's a funny guy. He's a funny bloke.
Should be good. Yeah.
And what about the podcast, Three Guys On?
ThreeGuysOn.com, also on Stitcher and Spotify and all the places where podcasts are.
Mm-hmm.
Three Guys, the word three, not the number three, but ThreeGuysOn.com. Me, Randolph Terrence, and a rotating cavalcade of guests. Including Chris Lambert from time to time.
Yes, and I'm also a subscriber to your Patreon. I am not a fucking freeloader.
Yeah, we got a Patreon, one episode behind the paywall every week, and then some other bonus content, and then one free episode every week on Thursday. So I'm trying to figure out a way to up our Patreon numbers, because we've been kind of steady for a while. So I'm like, what do I need to do? How do we get more money out of this?
Yeah, you know? you're doing way better than me, but I feel like I'm like, okay, these guys are my subscribers are paying for the podcast to get done, and they are the main reason why I even do this. It just motivates me to say, let me text Andy, let me bother Andy and make him talk to me for an hour, you know?
Yeah,
so it's because of them that these fucking freeloaders get anything.
And you tag me and you tag Three Guys On and I'll retweet you from both accounts.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you get a few clicks.
Yeah. Know? So, you know, we try to keep this thing popping. And it's another excuse to just to talk to you and shoot the shit anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So we'd be having this conversation anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
So why not record it? Content.
That's right. Content. All right, man. Thanks so much for doing this. Stay on the line. And everybody, we'll talk to you next time. Take it easy.